Hello and welcome to another episode of Reckless Adjacent.
Woo!
Yay!
Yeah. It's still nice to hear.
Yeah.
Just Reckless Adjacent.
Yes,
it makes me happy.
This is the show where I, GM Jonathan, get to foist new systems upon my players, systems that they have never played before, and we all just get to figure it out together as a group and have a great time. Sitting around the table tonight, I have Sophie.
Hello.
I have Steve.
Hello.
And I have Nathan, once again, reprising the role of David.
Hello.
But tonight, we are playing a very cool game, I think so. It is called Emberwind. It's a new-to-me game. Like, I think it came out in a Kickstarter a couple years ago, and it was recommended to us by one of our patrons, Ajax. Thank you, Ajax.
Thank you, Ajax.
Thank you.
And one of the things that stood out to me about this game was basically just how modular it was. It was a lot of different systems and subsystems that you can pick and choose and decide how you wanted to play the game. But the other thing that was really cool to me was this fact that you could play the game as a solo RPG. Like, there's enough structure and pre-written adventures in this game to be able to play it by yourself. But you could also scale it all the way up to a full table with a dungeon master or a storyteller like I'm going to be doing tonight. So there's a lot of different ways to play this game. But tonight we have three players. We have myself, the storyteller, and we are playing through one of the pre-written adventures in Emberwind called The Skies of Axia. And we've done a little bit of character discussion and rules discussions over on our Patreon in our Session Zero episode. So if you want to find out more about how that all works, go check out our Patreon. For tonight, we're going to get straight into the characters and the introductions. So what I'll ask is, let's go around the table, tell us who you are, who you're playing, and maybe a little bit about that character, because I think all of the characters have a backstory that really ties into the Skies of Axia campaign that we're playing through today.
Hi, everyone. Tonight, I'll be playing Piper of the Ardent class, and Piper is a young woman who is thrust into the political society of Adriel, in Axia.
Yes.
As her grandfather has nominated her as his heir. And he is actually the reason Piper is here, because he has taken it upon himself to help the area of Gelspar, who's Hearthstone is failing, and he's like, don't worry, I'll fix it.
Yes.
Vote for me later.
Yeah, right.
My granddaughter will help you out. And yeah, Piper is here. Doesn't know what's going on, but is going to do her best.
Hi, I'm Nathan.
Hi, Nathan.
Tonight, I will be playing the role of Rook, whose backstory was just handed to me, but yes. I'm already very into. Because he is your classic non-imaginative, like, paladin backstory, is this guy.
Yeah.
And I'm...
Every cliche in the book.
I'm extremely here for it, because Rook grew up in the city of Gelspar, or in Gelspar, right?
Yeah.
You know, he was a low-born individual, really got caught up in the local gangs. He was, I think, initiating into the Chasers Guild, which is a great name for a thieves guildy kind of thing, where he and someone else and one of his friends essentially got picked up by the law. And they said, hey, either we can punish both of you for essentially very intense, organized criminal activity, or you can join us. And he decided to join up with the military order and has essentially been devoting himself to justice and the pursuit therein ever since. But recently he's had a little bit of a crisis, you know, as many do. I don't know exactly how old he is, but he at least has the vibe of middle-aged crisis.
Yes.
Dad.
He's the Cassegrain of this group.
Yeah, exactly. Basically, just that it became apparent to him that the military order was more about serving the upper crust of society and not all people, certainly the people that he came from. So he's taken a step back recently, but he still has that burning desire for justice. And he's hoping he can find that very special job to save the city and scratch that justice seeking itch.
Hey, everyone. This is Steve here. And I, for this game, will be playing Loriot, a druid.
Hey.
Yeah.
Loriot is extremely interested in researching these hearth crystals and will go to pretty much any lengths to be able to get her grubby little hands on one of them. And so she has been the first to volunteer to any expedition pretty much that goes into the Silver Glades so that she can further her research.
So there's a lot of words, a lot of proper nouns, Silver Glades, Hearth Crystals, Axia, Gelspar, and that's all going to be explained in a little bit once we actually start playing the game.
Hopefully to us, too.
Yeah, hopefully to all of you. But I do want to talk a little bit about how we're going to be playing this. Again, like I mentioned, the game has a lot of structure. You can play it by yourself. You can play it with a table. And I'm going to be trying to follow a good amount of that structure as we go. We're going to be doing voting as we get to certain decision trees, decision points. Kind of like how you would play this game. Again, you can play this game actually without a dungeon master too. So look, if we were all sitting around a table and trying to make decisions based off of things, we could all vote. Like, we don't need me here telling you everything that's going on. So I'm going to be trying to like play it in that way, in the little more structured way as we go. Just to kind of get the vibe, the feel of what Emberwind is all about. So without further ado.
Ado.
Let's go ahead.
I'm not joining you.
We'll go ahead and play Emberwind, the pre-written adventure, The Skies of Axia. So the three of you have mentioned a little bit about this world that we're on. Axia. It is a very unpleasant place in that most of it has been taken over by a toxic miasma. You know, it's completely unlivable. You can't be near the ground, which is why they invented these flying cities. The place that you are in, Adriel, is one of these so-called flying cities, the great city in the sky, and it is powered by hearth crystals. However, all is not well. Adriel has a number of different sectors, different sections of the city. And the one that is sort of the slums, the forgotten, is called Gelspar. Gelspar has a hearth crystal as well, but it is failing. People keep taking shards and pieces of it, and because of that, their short-sightedness is causing the crystal to become smaller and smaller to the point where it will no longer be able to support Gelspar. Gelspar is going to fall into the miasma if nothing is done. And that is where the three of you come in. So you have all been instructed to meet at the foot of a statue called the Clueless Prince. It stands guard sort of on the edge of Gelspar between this section of the city and the Red Market, which is kind of like the merchant area. It is nighttime. No one else is around at this point. But as the three of you approach the Clueless Prince, you see in the distance a woman flanked by two guardsmen with long spears. They each have an emblem on their chests, a symbol of the Maddox emblem, which is something that you, Piper, would be familiar with, as that is the symbol, the emblem of your family.
Yes.
As the three of you approach, the woman speaks up and she says, "Welcome to Gelspar. My name is Elise, and I work for Kendrick. And now, so do you. I suggest that you all take a moment to become acquainted with each other."
Sorry, I'm just waiting for the moment to pull out the meme. Well, I'm tired of this, Grandpa!
I have literally no idea what you're talking
about. Oh, really?
About.
No,
not
what is
even
Trolls. It's like a
I've read that book and seen that movie. I have no idea what
you're
talking about.
Fine.
So I appreciate that you screamed it very loudly.
All I remember from that stuff is holes and onions.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, you got it.
Okay.
And this is the first conversation that the three of you have as a party in Gelspar. Would you mind telling me a little bit more about what your characters look like?
Piper is a young woman with long, dark hair, fair skin. She also has the same symbol or emblem as the Maddox clan, but it is on two gold clasps holding her long cape over her shoulders. She is putting on a brave face as she knows she is a representative for her grandfather, the patriarch of the clan, and the person vying for a seat on the Council of Nobles. But she is out of place and trying to make her own way in the world.
Rook is a, you know, kind of has the classic breastplate look. His whole head is covered by this very long, luxurious head of hair and beard, basically. So, you know, kind of like Hagrid-like, where you just kind of mostly see, like, eyes. But it is all very well maintained. And he's, you know, a very sturdy but still comforting presence.
So, Laureate is a slender woman, kind of dark red hair, and seems to be wearing mostly purples trimmed in gold. And everything looks good, except her boots look very worn. They look perfectly serviceable, but incredibly worn. Like they have seen many miles of travel on the unforgiving ground. She carries with her kind of a staff in one hand. It looks like it's both for defense as well as to help her move along some uneven terrain.
And as Elise raises her lantern and gets a good look at the three of you in the darkness, her eyes stop on you, Piper, for the briefest second. We're going to do the first roll
okay.
of this game.
Uh-oh.
Yes.
Already?
And I am not prepared for this.
I'm supposed to be here!
Yeah. And this game is, like Dungeons & Dragons, is a D20-based game. But unlike Dungeons & Dragons, the goal is to roll under or equal to a certain value. Sophie, I'm going to ask you for an insight roll, which is one of the skills in Emberwind. And again, your goal is to roll that D20 and get under or equal to your value.
Oh, sweet. It's my insight is an 8, and I rolled an 8.
Nice. Hey, okay.
I saw an 8, and my D&D brain still had forgotten.
No!
Yeah. Oh, fuck. Right. Yep. You don't add any modifiers either. You're just trying to get under or equal to that value. Piper, you don't recognize Elise, but you recognize that she recognizes you.
Mm.
She has worked with Kendrick for a long time, and given that you are his granddaughter, she has seen you around and, you know, back when you were much younger. So when she lays her eyes on you, she gets this sort of nostalgic look of better times.
I probably remind her of my mother, who was assassinated, so it's a real bummer for her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Man, you've really internalized this backstory quickly in a way that I really appreciate. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes over to you, Piper, and she gently lays a bag, a jingling bag, in your hands. As she backs up a little bit, she says, "For traveling expenses, you'll find a little extra than what Kendrick mentioned he would give to you. 20 gold pieces to get you started on your way. You'll find Kendrick at the Starlight Commons in the heart of Gelspar. He doesn't like to be kept waiting, and it's a bit of a walk, so you best be going. Oh, and do try to stick together. That part of town can be dangerous." Elise begins walking away towards the Red Market, but the three of you get the sense that something has been left unsaid. If you want to find out more about Gelspar, or about Elise or Kendrick, this is your only opportunity to ask her. However, questions take time. That is a resource that you cannot afford to waste. So we're going to come to the first vote of this campaign. The first sort of decision is you can either go to your meeting in Gelspar, you can continue on your way, or you can stay a while and ask Elise about the area. So what I would like each of you to do is get a D6. If you want to be on your way and go meet Kendrick in the middle of Gelspar, put a 1 in front of you. And if you want to stay and ask Elise about the area, put a 2 in front of you. And the number with the most votes is what we will go with for today.
Is the idea to ask her more about the area specifically?
Yeah, to ask her more about the area, maybe more about the job that you're doing.
Of the area of Gelspar, or the area we're going to be going to, or... Like, because if we're from here, we should already know a little bit about that side of town, I guess.
You can ask her more about, like, what she meant when she said, oh, it might be dangerous there. You can ask her who else Kendrick has hired to be part of this mission. So there's a couple things you can ask her about.
I think Rook has reservations of the job and Kendrick and his motivations, but doesn't particularly have a lot of reservations in terms of going to where he grew up. So he's going to say no, he's ready to move on. So that's, I'll put down a 1.
I have put down a 2 for Piper, as she is already in like a world she knows very little about. Mm-hmm. She was sent off to live in like the small town area, so she's not grown up like in the city, and Gelspar is very unfamiliar to her. And she saw that Elise recognized her, and like that felt weird.
Yeah.
So Piper would like to learn more.
Absolutely.
So here's the thing.
Yeah.
Laureate wants to get going immediately because crystals.
Yeah.
And this will get her to where she needs to be to do some research, or at least, you know, find out more about crystals. However, she is also a researcher.
Yes.
And so to have thorough knowledge of where we are going and what we need to do is better than having nothing. So I think on this particular one, the knowledge is going to win out.
Okay.
So we're going to put down a 2.
All right. So the three of you decide to call Elise back and ask a few more questions. And she says, I can spare a few minutes, but make it quick. There are other places that I need to be.
Why is there more money than Kendrick initially offered? Is there something more you know of than he let on?
Well, Piper, and her face softens a little bit. You probably don't remember me, but I remember you. I've worked with your grandfather for a very long time, and I had the pleasure of watching you grow up when you were young. I truly hope that you succeed in this mission. And I put a little bit of my own funds into this. But I do have a little information for you as well, if we're taking the time to talk. The area that you're headed to, there's only one main way to get there, and it is called Hacksaw Bridge. I don't know what group controls it right now. The Chasers might have taken it over completely, but there's always people laying traps on both sides of the bridge, trying to take over, if you will.
What the hell are Chasers?
Does Rook chime?
Yeah, that's kind of the question.
I mean, it sounds like something that chases after you, but after that, what do they do when they catch you?
They're a guild. Mostly varieties of crime, petty and up. Been here in Gelspar for certainly as long as I can remember.
Oh, best to be avoided then, huh?
And Elise pipes in with, you may not even have that option. Kendrick himself has hired the Chasers to protect the crystal in Gelspar. We've seen a number of people try to steal the shards, which makes this whole operation much more difficult. As you know, if that crystal fails, Gelspar itself will fall out of the sky, and the more people who try to steal from that crystal, the less time we have to resolve this problem. So you may encounter some Chasers as you get closer to the crystal. They're here on Kendrick's orders.
Interesting.
Is there anything we can show him to prove that we're also here on Kendrick's orders?
Well, you have a member of the Maddox family. I'm sure they'd be willing to speak to her.
Piper gives a small wave.
But honestly, I would stay out of their way. They are not known for their...
Hospitality.
That's the right word. Now, if there's nothing else, I really must be going.
Thank you.
I'm ready. Let's not waste any more time. I gotta go see one of these crystals.
And she
I went from Irish to Scottish.
And as Elise turns to go, she gives you one last warm smile, Piper, and she says, when you see your grandfather, please give him my regards.
Piper smiles back and says, I'll do that.
All right. So the three of you go on your way.
And now we know we got to watch out for traps.
Yes.
Who traps a bridge?
People who want control of that bridge.
I feel like a bridge is a trap.
Inherently.
Yeah. So the three of you walk into the cool night air as fog shrouds the streets of Gelspar. The streets are deserted as you approach the Hacksaw Bridge. It's a very rickety bridge. There's only a few sheets of metal that separate you and the world below. And as you know in Axia and the floating city of Adriel, there is nothing once you fall off.
Yeah, see? Inherently a trap.
Yep, precisely. Especially this bridge.
As you approach, you can tell the bridge itself has seen better days. In the past, maybe there was a railing on each side that might...
There's not even a railing?
There's not even a railing.
Oh, this is a fucking trap.
And there are two bodies slumped against a building next to the bridge. They seem to be sleeping, dead, or drunk in some capacity, but they do not notice as the three of you approach.
I would like to get a read. Do I get any sense that these are lookouts? Are they trying to pretend to be like asleep, but actually they're kind of like tense maybe and ready to spring up into action or something?
I was going to say, this reminds me of the old drunk man, dead man routine. Worth checking out.
So I'll ask the party, go ahead and make me an insight check, and then all of you can do this.
Natural 20.
Wow.
Yeah. I got a 5.
Oh, nice.
Piper with a 4.
Okay, so Piper and Laureate succeed.
Piper is just like highly vigilant and like kind of twitchy, like looking around at everything, you know, like small town girl in a big city that everyone's warned her somebody's going to pick your pocket in.
Yep.
Like that's her vibe right now.
The two of you, as you're looking around, a couple things stand out to you. Laureate, you had the right idea. These two seemingly indisposed individuals, they're wearing ratty clothes, but you can see the glint of metal underneath their coats. They seem to be armed in some way. In addition, there doesn't seem to be any sort of like obvious, it's not like a bear trap or anything, but the rickety bridge in front of you has been laden with bits of broken glass, bits of sheet metal that appear to have been strategically placed, shall we say. So there's going to be areas of terrain on the bridge that you're going to have to watch out for, and that wouldn't have been obvious to you if you hadn't taken the time to prepare for it. So you've got these two fellows who are pretending to be asleep or drunk in some ways. You know that there are potential bits of glass and sheet metal on the bridge. Before you can really put together the full picture of what's going on here tonight, though, the three of you hear a shrill scream coming from the other side of the bridge. A woman runs into view from the other side, and a chorus of deep barks and growls are erupting from behind her, chasing her across the bridge. She cries out, "Please! Anyone, please help me!" A moment later, she makes it to the middle of the bridge, and you can finally see what is going after her. There are a number of large, misshapen hounds that emerge from the shadows and seem to be stalking their way slowly towards the woman as she struggles to escape. Behind the two dogs is a man, slowly closing in, wearing a mask painted like a skull. And Rook, you would know that this is the identity, this is the symbol of the Chasers. The man approaches with a steady pace, looks at his faithful hounds as the creatures stop in front of the woman who is crawling now, trying to get away from them. The man looks at her, looks at the three of you, and says, "It seems we have visitors on this quiet night. Best to walk away. This doesn't concern any of you." And he looks directly at you, Piper, and at the symbol on your chest. "Wouldn't want to upset the boss now, would we?" The three of you have a decision to make here. You can either decide to help the woman, or you can be on your way, leave the chaser to his business, and let him do the job that Kendrick paid him for.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah, please.
So Rook is, you know, again, older-ish, and so he's been out, he's been away from the chasers for quite a while, but it's still been, like, in the city.
Yeah.
Does he know where the current, like, state of reputation for the chasers are, if that makes sense? In terms of, like, have they taken a bend towards, like, just kind of more malicious violence in recent times?
Yeah.
Or have they always been kind of maliciously violent? Or like, what assumptions can he maybe go into this interaction with?
Yeah, any? You absolutely would know that they've kind of just always been maliciously violent.
Yeah.
And you can already assume, like, if no one steps in, that woman is dead. 100%. He will not have any mercy for her. So what I have for the three of you is a vote, again. You can either vote one to jump into the fight and try to save the woman. Or you can vote two to listen to the chaser, let him do his job, and be on your way. This is not a vote that you will have an opportunity to discuss. Cover up your number, and on the count of three, we're all going to reveal what we all decided to do. So this is what in the game is called a snap vote. It's like
very cool.
It's
one of those, I like it.
Yeah, yep. It's like everyone make your choice right now. So on the count of three, one, two, three,
we going, baby.
Everyone has decided to
for justice
save the woman. All right.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
Hello, everyone. GM Nathan here. And welcome once more to The Midroll. This is where I remind you to follow us on all the social medias, particularly on Twitter at @reckless_attack, where we are posting a variety of frogs and memes and frog memes and meme frogs. You can find all our socials by visiting our website at recklessattack.com and much more. If you like us, consider supporting us on Patreon. It's one of the best ways to help us grow and improve the show. Early ad-free episodes, level-up talkbacks, and oodles of other stuff await you there at a variety of tiers. Lastly, don't forget to tell a friend if you're enjoying the show, or let us know by leaving a rating or review on your podcatcher of choice. That's all for me. Enjoy the rest of the episode.
So the three of you have chosen violence.
I like to think of it as choosing morality.
That's fair.
Justice.
Yep. And unlike in Dungeons & Dragons, we're not going to roll for initiative. The way this works is there's a set initiative order, and players always go first. It always goes players, then enemies, then player, then enemy, then players, then enemies. So you're essentially taking turns back and forth to do something. There's different groups of enemies. So there's like these mooks. They're called grunts. There's like the awakened, which are slightly tougher. There's the elite, which are even tougher. And as the battle goes on, the stronger enemies get to go. Between rounds, you can choose to switch up where you are in the initiative order. So for example, Nathan as Rook, if you wanted to go first this time around to like take the initiative, stab a grunt before it gets the move, and then next turn like fall back, let someone else do that, you can absolutely choose to do that. The three of you find yourself again on Hacksaw Bridge. The three of you are on one side of the bridge. The Houndmaster and his shadowy hounds are on the other side of the bridge, and you've got two regular individuals who are threatening you with short swords. Emberwind is played on a battle map, so I've drawn a little battle map here. Listeners, we're going to try and make sure that you all have an idea of what's going on, but But we'll see how that goes.
The important part is that it's like, you know, 6-ish squares apart. There are several squares that are blacked out that are the holes in the bridge. There's glass on the bridge, apparently, that we have
those
to watch out
for. Mean chasers.
Yeah, I guess so. And then it looks like there's a whole strip on one side, unfortunately, the side that we're on, that is very windy, I think you said, that will affect our, and hopefully their, ranged attacks.
Yep, that's right. So who would like to go first as we start our first combat of Emberwind?
I can go first. It feels right that Rook would kind of, he would be going in to be like, oh, okay. Either I'm going to be able to get in a word and it probably won't go well, or I won't be able to get in a word and it will definitely not go well. So I think he was pretty ready overall. So we have four actions, or like we have an action pool, basically like four actions, I guess.
Yeah,
in a way.
Four points of action.
Some actions cost more, some cost less. I'm going to use my first fast action, which is 1 point in the pool. And I'm going to shift a little bit forward, which just means shift forward one square. Kind of putting myself a little bit between the rest of the party and the two people who are laying in wait. And as part of this shift, I am drawing from behind my back a huge spear that is very simple, but very clearly well taken care of and an excellent weapon. Under his breath, he's going to say he's going to ask for intercession. As part of his holy order, and he is going to cast Guided Weapon on himself, which makes it just a little bit easier to hit, should further violence be necessary. That is a slow action, which takes two of the little, you know, kind of four things. And then for his fourth action, he is going to turn towards the woman who is leading out, essentially.
Yep.
And he is going to use a fast spell called Word of Comfort. And he says,
Madam, we don't know what the situation is, but we'll make sure you get across this bridge safe and sound.
And she is going to heal 1d10.
Hey,
nice.
2.
Well,
but rolling low is good. Yeah, so it's 8.
Haha, gotcha.
Yeah.
That's actually an 8. Yeah.
She is limping her way across the bridge, trying to get closer to your side, and that gives her just a little bit more strength to do so. Going into the grunt's turn. One thing I should also explain about this game, I mentioned at the beginning that you could play this game without a GM. You could play it solo if you want. And the way that you do that, if you are running enemies, is if any of you are familiar with like the Gloomhaven style of games, where there's like an enemy AI kind of thing, that's what this game has. So what normally happens is you roll a dice, and depending on what that dice shows, you choose a specific action based for each enemy. So like for these hounds, if I rolled a 1, they would move and attack. Or if I rolled a 5, they would move and do like a special ability, that kind of stuff.
Love that.
I, however, am a very mean GM, and I am just going to play them like I want to play them and not use the die system. So, so I'm just going to have them all murder you. The grunts are closing in on you.
Are the hounds and the street urchins both grunts?
They're both grunts. They're all grunts, yep. The two chaser, they're called street jacks. They're going to come up to you, Rook, and threaten you with their short swords. And they are going to try and strike at you. You are going to roll a defense roll. So you're going to roll a d20 and try to roll under your defense value, which is dodge. So there's two types of defenses in this game. There's dodge and there's willpower. They're specifically targeting your dodge.
And I'm trying to roll. So if I roll under, then they hit.
If you roll under or equal to, you dodge.
My dodge is very low, actually. That is a 14 over 6 and a 12 over 6.
All right. So unfortunately, you don't manage to dodge. So the first attack's going to do 15 points of damage as it strikes you. However, that is reduced by your toughness. So you will always reduce the damage that you take by that value.
Oh, excellent.
And the second attack is only going to do 10 points of damage, once again reduced by toughness.
Okay, so only 9 points of damage total.
Nice. Okay, so you're not that good at dodging, but you've got plenty of toughness. And that is what they're going to do. The hounds are also going to move in at the behest of the Houndmaster on the other side of the bridge. One of the hounds does not have an easy path to the three of you, so it's going to have to walk over the glass. It's going to take some damage, and its further movement is going to be reduced. The other one is going to kind of jump around the different gaps in the bridge and also move closer to the three of you, but they're not close enough right now to bite at you with their large, shadowy jaws. And that is the end of the grunt's turn. Who is up next?
Okay. Unfortunately, the Houndmaster is very far away.
Yeah, he's on the other side of the bridge.
And Piper needs all of her action points to do the things. She will start by casting Chains of Calamity.
Cool.
This will target the two street jacks. And yeah, she can hit both of them. So I'm going to roll a cap check.
Yep.
Right, to see if that hits them. And I roll one because it's one spell attacking multiple.
Yep, correct.
Okay, that is a 10, which is over my critical, under my accuracy, but over penetration.
Yep, that's right. And Sophie mentioned the term cap check. That's the primary roll in this game. It's a d20, but you're trying to get under a certain set of numbers. So there's critical, accuracy, penetration. And that decides if you crit the enemy, if you hit the enemy, and if you bypass their sort of toughness or their defenses. So Sophie, in this case, with her Chains of Calamity spell, did hit, didn't crit, and did not manage to bypass their defenses, but you do get the full effect of the spell.
Okay. So that is 4 points of piercing damage.
What else does that spell do in addition to damage?
It just does 1d6 piercing damage for now. Well, until the start of your next turn, if one or more foes suffering Chains of Calamity is the target of a spell action, deal 1d6 piercing damage to all foes suffering Chains of Calamity.
So, because they're now chained, if anyone in the party uses a spell action on either one of them, both of them will take that additional d6 points of damage. And that is until the beginning of your next turn.
Yes.
So, what else would you like to do for your turn?
As another... actually... I'm realizing... So this is not like D&D where I can cast as many spells as I want.
Yes, you can use
whether
many
or not
actions.
They're fat. Like, yep. So I can cast four fast spells, right?
As long as you have, as long as you have the action points to do
okay.
it. I think, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. As long as you have the action points, you can do that.
Okay.
Yes.
Setting up my own shot, I'm going to cast Mana Echoes on Street Jack 1.
Okay, cool.
Which is an auto hit 2d8 damage.
Yes, it is.
And I will add a d6. Let me roll the d8.
Yep, roll the d8. Yep, that automatically hits. It can't crit, but it just straight up hits him. It's like a magic missile kind of thing.
That's 10 points.
Oh, wow.
And then, 1 point for both.
What I'll say is that first street jack, they weren't looking very good. You don't know if it was an act or not, but they weren't particularly tough to begin with. That first street jack takes the full effect of the mana echoes and just crumples to the ground. You have already defeated one foe, and it disappears.
Great. I'm going again.
Okay.
I will target street jack number 2 with my mana echoes auto hit 2d8. 8.
Oh, wow.
2.
12 points for that, and then they still get the Chains of Calamity, right?
Yeah.
One other 1 point on that.
And because of your 2 auto hits, both of the street jacks are going to crumple to the ground, falling to both your mana echoes and your Chains of Calamity.
Get wrecked, street jacks!
The Houndmaster calls to his hounds. Looks like the hired help wasn't any good. But I know the 2 of you will serve me well. Go, my hounds! And he calls on them to attack.
Yes, attack us. Group together.
Yes.
Fall into my trap.
He saunters onto the bridge, bladed whip in one hand, dagger in the other, and his speech, you can tell, has riled up the nearest bloodhound in front of him. It begins frothing at the mouth, its shadowy jaws bite with increasing force, and you can tell that one bloodhound is getting really worked up. It's going to hurt a lot if it hits you. Right now, the Houndmaster's in the middle of the bridge, and that is the end of his turn.
All right, so a property of the staff that I have is that your first spell, each encounter, is a free action.
Yes.
So as my first spell for this encounter and a free action, I am going to cast Primal Fury.
Okay.
Upon Rook.
Interesting. Okay, what does Primal Fury do?
So they have +2 penetration.
Cool.
and they may make one basic melee during their turn as a free action.
Oh, nice.
So essentially it gives them an extra attack.
Yeah, it's like haste, kind of.
Yes, and that is one of my sustained spells.
Okay, cool.
Then as my first action, as a slow action, so it'll cost me 2 points, I'm going to cast Wildfire on Hound number one.
All right, sounds good. And that's the one that's frothing at the mouth.
That is the one that is frothing at the mouth. And so I need to make the cap check
yep,
for that?
That's right.
Okay. Oh, look, a 19.
No!
Well, that didn't work.
No, sadly, yeah.
But
Wildfire whips.
If at first you don't succeed, yeah, I'll try it again. That'll be the 4 points.
Another set. Wildfire.
Another Wildfire at Hound number one. 14.
Okay.
Which is below my accuracy of
good.
16.
Good.
However, not above, it is above my penetration.
Okay, nice.
So 4 points of damage, and that is also a sustained spell.
Okay.
And I am, because I have sustained two,
yeah.
able to sustain two spells at the same time.
All right.
My question about this, though,
yeah.
is the, so it says sustained effect, repeat effect, and also deal damage to foes adjacent to your target.
Yes.
That is next round?
Yep, next round. At the start of your turn, it'll deal damage and hit everything around it as well.
Gotcha.
The one thing I will say, Steve / Laureate, that 4 points of damage did hit, but it was not enough to bypass the Bloodhound's resistance.
Curses!
So it is on fire, but it seems to just be basking in it. It's not really noticing the fire at all.
Well, that's right. Actually. Hopefully, you know, maybe next round it does more. Maybe yep. the round after that it does more.
Absolutely. But it continues to be set on fire.
Unfortunately, it just looks way cooler.
Yeah. It's powered up a little
bit. Well, but now you said it was nighttime, right?
Yeah.
So now we can see.
Yeah, that's true. That's great. All right. Top of the order. Rook, would you still like to go first, or would you like one of your allies to take the mantle up before the Bloodhounds can close in?
I'm thinking about going first.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go first, if that's cool with everyone, just to continue to put myself out in front of the squishies. Okay. He's going to look around, seeing that the two people close to us are down, and he is just going to, from where he is standing, is going to squat down, holding his spear in hand, and take a huge flying leap forward and use Lion's Pounce.
Cool.
So he's going to just do a big, like, flying leap, aka just, you know, kind of some fancy diagonal movement, and it's going to essentially land right in the middle of everything.
Yeah, right.
Right next to one of the, actually, the angriest of hellhounds, and within reach of, I think, literally everyone on the battlefield with his big spear in hand. And he is going to, as part of that, make a basic melee attack. I also get plus two accuracy and plus two penetration, kind of like as a charge almost.
Cool.
And plus two penetration from me.
Oh, yes. And plus two penetration from you.
Your penetration could be higher than your accuracy.
Yeah.
I rolled enough barely for my accuracy.
Okay. Okay. But that still counts. That is going to go ahead and hit. Give me that damage on that first Bloodhound.
This is 3d8, which is pretty fun. It is very weird that there's no additional bonuses.
Right. Yeah.
These rolls. Yeah. Like,
you're not adding strength or anything.
Yeah, exactly. 21 points of damage total.
Oof. And that
excuse me. And that is against the Hellhound that is closest to me.
Also on fire.
Who's also on fire, right. Who is also slathering and whatnots.
It's going to be able to tank a little bit of that due to its inherent toughness, but you can tell it's struggling a little bit after that hit.
And he is going to use Word of Comfort on himself.
Okay.
And heal an additional 1d10, because why not? 10, yes.
Hey, all right, Rat.
So
Rook is looking good.
All the way to full.
Hey,
and
nice.
That is the end,
all right,
finally, of my turn.
You're going to need it, because that Bloodhound turns its shadowy maw towards you. The first thing it's going to do is try to bite you. Go ahead and give me a defense roll using your dodge.
8/6.
All right, so you're not going to dodge. Because it was inspired by the Houndmaster last turn, it's going to do a bunch of extra damage. Ugh. You're going to find yourself taking 28 points of damage.
Excuse me?
As it just takes a big bite into your leg.
I'm glad I healed, I guess.
Yep. And the other Bloodhound, seeing the incredible pounce that you made, is going to do something very similar. It is going to pounce towards the back line across this bridge, and it find itself right next to Laureate. Laureate, go ahead and give me a defense roll using your dodge as it pounces.
Get away from me. That is an 11 against my defense of 10.
Ah, no. All right, so it is going to hit. And, ooh, that's bad. 20 points of damage.
Oh, my God.
I'm rolling hot dice tonight. And that's going to be reduced by your toughness, but it's still 20 points of damage. Whew. I'm also going to need you to make me a willpower roll. Another defense roll using your willpower to not get knocked prone by this thing.
Willpower to not get knocked prone. Could we perhaps do something else?
No.
That is a 6 against my willpower of 4.
Oh, no. All right. This charging bloodhound streaks past Rook and the other bloodhound to chase you down and knock you over. And that is the two bloodhounds' turn. Who would like to go next?
Do you have something? Otherwise, I would like... I could...
I can't heal you. I'm not that good.
I can heal me.
Okay.
Which actually might be what I...
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and heal yourself?
Actually, yeah. All right, I'll go.
Yeah, all right. Laurie, good response. Yeah,
Laurie's going to go. Okay. The first thing I'm going to do is... And you'll have to explain this to me just a little bit. Okay. So I have an action called Bloom, which is a free action.
Yep.
Auto hit... Remove all of your sustained effects on your target, and they take 5 times removed effect piercing damage. So I have 1 sustained effect on that hellhound that is over there. So does that mean they take 5 times?
It's just 5. 5 times 1, yeah. Because you have 1 sustained effect.
So auto hit, and it's piercing damage.
Yep, so that bypasses their toughness.
Well, but it says piercing and not penetration.
Piercing always. Piercing means that it does that.
Okay. And then it says amplified effect... What is that?
If you choose to use the point to amplify it, I think that's how it works.
Amplify effect, expend 1 fast action to remove all sustain effects from your target instead.
Yeah.
So instead of doing damage, I can remove whatever is making it berserk or tougher.
It's not a sustain ability.
Bummer.
Yeah, oh, it's not? Okay.
Yeah, sorry. If it was like a buff or something.
Yeah,
it would.
Good thinking though.
Yeah. Okay. In that case, as a free action.
Yes.
I am going to remove my sustainability of the wildfire on that target and have it take 5 points of piercing damage, which then bypasses its armor.
Absolutely.
And it just takes 5.
And that is looking pretty bad at this point.
Okay.
Yeah.
Next, I've got a problem.
this other bloodhound is causing some trouble for you.
I will use 2 points for a slow action to use my staff and try to slam it into this hound on top of me.
Yep.
So let's see here. 13, which is below my accuracy, but not below my penetration.
Right. Oh, nice.
Cool.
And as everyone knows, a regular mundane staff does 3d8 damage.
Yeah.
The exact same as me with a big-ass spear.
Right. So that is 15 points.
15, okay. That's reduced damage a bit, but that's still a hefty hit right there.
Yeah.
One thing I'll also say is because you're currently prone, you can use a fast action to get up. Otherwise, it's going to be easier for it to hit you next time.
Okay, that was my next question. Yep. Was actually, how do I do that? Okay, so that was a slow. I will use a fast action to stand up, and that leaves me with 1 point left, which I will hold in reserve for a possible triggered action later.
Very cool. Love that.
Scratch that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm going to use that fast action right now to cast Rejuvenation.
Okay, cool.
On myself.
Yes.
Smart.
Okay, so that it is sustained, but I do heal 1d8 damage.
All right.
2 points.
Nice.
So I feel 2 points better.
Still out, though.
Yeah,
still. And that'll be it.
The Houndmaster gazes upon the battlefield, sees one of his poor hounds on fire, sees the other one...
Not anymore.
Sees the other one get whapped in the face by a staff, and thinks to himself, these heroes are a bit tougher than I thought they would be. Let's see what I can do about that. He calls out to his hounds, and once again bolsters them. All bloodhounds heal 10 health.
Oh.
So that one that you just hit with a staff... You know, you could start to see some of that shadow drip off of it, but all of a sudden it coagulates and it looks almost perfectly healthy again. And the one next to you, Rook, also begins to take a much more substantial shape.
Mm-hmm.
The Houndmaster looks at you with your spear, Rook, and shoots his bladed whip at you, trying to weaken you. Go ahead and give me a defense roll versus your dodge.
That is a natural one.
Hey!
Nice.
All right. So you completely avoid that ability, and you do not have to find out what happens when his disarming lash hits you.
Yep. I know. I know his tricks, and yeah. I'm ready for them.
Yep. But he otherwise stands right there. And coming to the end of the turn, Piper.
I am going to do a kind of boring turn.
Great. Boring but effective.
Safe, boring but effective. I will be casting Mana Echoes 4 times.
You know?
Wow.
Great. Okay. Love to see it.
The hound next to Rook is the one that has been pretty weak. So I am going to hit that one first.
Yeah.
9 points of damage.
It's reduced by resistance, but yeah, you're beaten.
Okay,
on it.
One more time. 9 more points of damage.
It's still up, but it's on its last legs.
I'm going to keep going. 14 points of damage.
And with that third mana echo, you bring the bloodhound to its knees, and it slumps to the ground and disappears.
And then I will cast the last one that is right in front of Laureate and myself.
Okay.
6 points of damage. To that one.
That tickles it. I think it's funny that you just decided, no, I'm not going to roll a cap check.
Yeah.
Yeah, why bother?
I don't need to engage with this mechanic of this new game we're trying. Right. Thank you very much.
I'm just going to auto
hit. I had a grand plan of like shifting and then like, but then they all moved. And I couldn't get them all within my chains of calamity. And I was like, well, what if I just...
Magic missile. And that worked great.
Yeah. And now it's back to my friend's turn.
Yeah.
So it's fine.
So the battle on the bridge continues for the third turn. The heroes have slain the 2 street jacks and 1 hound.
Thank you, Piper has.
Yeah, Piper has. significantly reducing the difficulty... making steady progress against the chaser. But the chaser, the Houndmaster himself, has not taken any damage, and he is very upset at you, Piper, for having slain one of his bloodhounds. And he glares at you as this next round continues.
Piper makes the equivalent of the middle finger at him.
All right. Who's up first? Rook, once again?
I have some things I can do, but if anyone has something where it's like, actually, based off where they're standing right now, I would like to do a thing.
No, yeah, you're good.
Sick. And is Primal Fury still up?
Yeah.
It is still sustained, yes.
Excellent.
So right now, I'm sustaining 2 things, Primal Fury and Rejuvenation.
Now that the kind of crazed hound that was threatening him is down, he's able to turn his attention more fully to the Beastmaster in front of him, and he extends his spear out in front of him, kind of striking a very soldierly pose, and just says, "Violence does not need to continue. Lay down your arms, and we can carry on with our days."
The Houndmaster turns his mask with the skull painted on it directly in your face and just chuckles. "You think you're making it out of this?"
"Well, I understand. When somebody dons the white skull of a chaser, there's no going back." And with that, he just stabs outwards at him.
Nice.
He does have reach, 2-square reach with this big old spear.
Absolutely.
And so he is going to try to skewer this individual.
Cool.
Hell yeah.
So it does pass my accuracy check.
Yep.
But that is it.
Okay. You do hit.
I do hit. 14 points of damage against him.
All right.
I am going to spend an additional fast action to cause that foe to become fallen.
So it will not work on him.
No!
What happens is fallen is they're dead. They're KO'd. Your ability can instantly KO a grunt. That's that simple. Sorry, I should have clarified.
Oh, Nathan, actually, I want... So on your second page... It has more symbols on the bottom right hand.
Yeah. Sorry, I should have explained.
Nope. That totally makes sense.
Okay. And then also, some of my things have little symbols that go to the like the resistances. So like there's little symbols next to those.
Got it.
Yeah, so a skewer in this case will not cause him to die instantly. It can cause the other bloodhound to die instantly.
What a sick ability for just being like, "Nah, I kill you."
I think I'm going to do a basic attack.
Okay. So we'll pretend like the skewer was just a basic deck.
Cool. Right? Which is, still does the 14 damage. Also, I am, thanks to Laureate's primal fury,
yes.
I'm going to continue to stab.
All right. That first stab was not enough. You feel the fury, and you stab.
That is a natural one.
Oh,
wow.
Nice. All right.
That is a critical hit.
Yes. So it automatically bypasses their defenses, obviously. And it does the maximum amount that you could do for that attack. So you don't have to roll. Just tell me what the highest value is.
That is wonderful news. That is 24
Ooh,
points.
Ooh, nice. Okay. Okay. He wasn't paying too much attention to you before. He was really fixated on Laureate. But now that you've stabbed him so much, he's going to turn his attention towards you, Rook.
And then how is everyone feeling HP-wise? Not great, I assume.
Piper is unharmed.
I've been better.
But you're slowly healing yourself, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true.
You could heal Laureate, you know.
I think you guys are fine back there. So he is going to offer a word of comfort to himself.
Great.
because this is all dredging up a lot of emotions, obviously, and also this is hurting quite a bit. So the base word of comfort is a fast action, but you actually can expend additional fast actions to heal my target for more HP.
Hmm.
So I am going to first roll a d10. That is a 6. And with the extra fast action, it is 5 times the number of actions spent. So I'm going to bump that up to 5 additional. So 11 points of healing.
Nice. Pretty good. Pretty good.
End of turn.
All right. That Bloodhound is going to continue to savage you, Laureate. It's going to make an attack against you. Go ahead and give me that defense roll using your dodge.
That's an 8 of a dodge of 10.
Okay. So you do successfully dodge.
I do successfully
wow.
dodge.
Nice. Okay. Hey. Cool. That bloodhound is trying to bite at you, but
get back, you beast.
Now that you've stood up, you're doing much better in terms of defense. The next person to go is Piper or Laureate.
Well, I do have this thing right in front of me, I guess. Well, actually, so do you, but it's going after me.
Yeah.
So when does the sustained stuff take effect?
At the beginning of your turn.
So at the beginning of my turn, I will heal 1d8?
Yes.
8.
Nice. Wow. All right.
All right. So that brings me to not quite full, but getting closer.
Yeah.
So before, when this hound had the hound master had said something and the hound kind of started healing a little bit. Well, now Laureate is back on her feet.
Yes.
And you can see like the scratches and bite marks start
Very
healing.
Very cool. Yes.
And she's like, you're not the only one who can do this. And I am going to take a staff attack.
Yeah.
As a slow action, so this will be 2 points. And you said the sustained stuff doesn't cost anything.
Doesn't cost anything.
Okay.
Once you've started it, yep.
All right, so staff attack. That's a 13, which is below my accuracy of 16,
nice.
So
nice.
It does hit 19 points of damage.
Nice. Nice. Okay.
It's so funny. Just absolutely wailing on this dog with a staff. With a staff, just like overhead, thwap, yeah. Thwap.
It wasn't injured at all before, thanks to the healing, but now both of you are looking pretty bad. So, yeah, good staff hit. Anything else?
So that was 2 points.
Hit it again.
I'll try to hit it with again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Try to hit it again. 8.
Yes.
Which is equal to my penetration.
That is, yep. Nice. So that bypasses
so
its defenses.
All this bypasses its armor. Yeah. It's been, so 19.
Oh.
Damn!
Propos again, just why do one staff smack when two smack staff smack is available?
It
I
is.
Think that was like the same damage as David's like fifth level spell.
Yeah,
and like it's more damage than the spells that he has on his character.
Right.
Yeah,
not using your spells.
Yeah, the
staff.
It. Well, the other problem with that is I am currently in melee.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
This is not the ideal situation.
But also, you're dealing out almost 40 points of damage every turn. Yeah. So, like, you know,
well, those were high rolls though. That
it is. Struggling to stand at this point. You think a stiff breeze would knock this last bloodhound over, but it is not down yet.
Okay. That is all of my action points for this round.
The Houndmaster's turn. He is once again going to try to strike at you with his bladed whip. Go ahead and give me a defense roll using your dodge.
That is a failure.
All right. So it does connect this time, and you're going to find yourself taking only 11 points of damage, reduced by your toughness, but you do suffer 5 stacks of weakness, which is a condition.
Wait, I'm sorry. 5 stacks of weakness?
Yes.
-1 times stack damage to all of your actions?
No, it's damage.
Damage. Okay, so he does less damage. That's what it is. So whatever action he does does.
Oh, to your actions, mage. I thought he took away your action points. And I was like, what the? You didn't even get rid of anything.
I have -1 action?
No, he just does 5 points less.
Uh-huh. Got it.
Damage.
Makes way more sense. Yeah.
So, yes, Rook, you're going to be doing 5 less damage on all of your actions.
Understood.
He is going to shift towards you, Rook.
Into glass.
So it'll take a little bit of damage, but he's not super concerned about that right now. As the glass crunches beneath his feet, he strikes at you with his dagger and tries to hit you. Go ahead and give me another dodge roll.
I've succeeded.
Okay.
2 under 6.
Thankfully, you managed to dodge his dagger attack, and he glares at you menacingly. This combat is coming to a close, but we'll see if the Houndmaster can take one of you with him.
I'll learn a new class. That's fine.
Yeah. As we go back to the top of the initiative, Rook.
As who would like to go?
As Piper would like to go next at the end of the turn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would.
Yeah.
I would like to go.
Again, the Bloodhound in front of you, very weak. And the Houndmaster is distracted with thoughts of Rook and revenge.
Mm-hmm. See, I would want to do other things, but I can do Mana Echo 4 times.
It's just the thing is.
Yeah, right. I mean, the one in front of you, like, that hound is not.
You've spoken like a true warlock.
Yeah.
You know, I could do other stuff, but Eldritch Blast.
Yeah. It works every time.
They're all just in a really bad position for my other stuff. And all, like, that's like, Mana Echoes is literally like the one fast action I have.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm just going to start fast actioning the hound in front of us and see what happens.
Great.
This visual is so good because it's just one of you beating on it with a stick and the other just point blast, like doing like a Dragon Ball Z style, just like energy blast, just like shotgun, just.
I like to imagine Piper and me just like, shoot, no. Yeah. Only 5 points of damage.
It's very weak, but that is not enough damage thanks to its resistance.
10 points of damage.
There it is. All right. Okay, now the final Bloodhound falls.
Have you taken down everything?
Yes.
Yep.
And you know what? Just switch it up. I'll use a slow action, and I will try to strike the Houndmaster with Soul Strike.
Okay.
And if this fails, I'm only doing Mana Echoes for the rest of the campaign. Well. It is a 5.
Yeah.
So it is under my accuracy and under my penetration.
Yeah, all right.
14 points of damage to the Houndmaster.
He's got some beefy resistance, but you did completely bypass it. So he'll take the full 14 points, which is good for you.
Great. As Piper shoots Soul Streak into the Houndmaster, she double birds him.
A frequent character trait of Sophie's mm-hmm. people.
She's a feisty. She's like, what? She was so scared starting this. And she was like, my grandpa's not the boss of me. I mean, technically he is, but no,
In this exact moment, I'm choosing
free will.
To
Thank
do
you.
4 fast actions of the same thing. Thank you very much.
So at the beginning of the round, the Houndmaster, seeing his allies fallen, seeing his bloodhounds destroyed, staring down 3 heroes, a rejuvenating laureate, a mana-echoing, blasting Piper, and a sturdy-looking Rook with a spear, decides that he'd rather take his chances with the sky below. And he is going to turn around and leap off this bridge.
What?
What?
And as he disappears into the fog, the only thing the 3 of you can hear is the silent sobbing of the woman on the bridge. And with that, we'll go ahead and end our first episode of Emberwind and Reckless Adjacent. Thank you all for joining, and we will see you all next time.
Woof.
I'm sorry, you fucking jumped at the bridge! rich?
Oh, wow. What a metal ending. Well,
you know, the loss of his hounds probably hit him pretty hard.
Yeah. I have to think about this one.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. Bye.
It is the show where I, GM Nathan, foist new systems upon the GM. I'm not GM Nathan.
Look,
I was like, technically, you could go by the nickname Nathan as your John Nathan.
Yeah,
maybe Nathan is the dungeon master position. Yeah, it's like an office. Yeah, like I am the Nathan.
I am willing to give up my identity for this podcast.
I assume the title of Nathan.
That's fine.
No. What was I saying?
Okay. You're introducing yourself.
Yeah.